Do your thing, babes. We're gonna make our own galleries, our own art shows, our own spaces. We're gonna be our own audiences, our own markets, our own benefactors. This is for everyone who is far away from home, but close to it at the same time. Diaspora Babes is the art you make, the art you love, and the arc of justice. We are brown, queer, struggling, thriving, too much, too loved, and too loving. My name is Amal. I'm a Yemeni-Lebanese artist currently living in Paris, and this is Diaspora Babes, love letters to myself and you. Hi babes, quick announcement. We are now available on iTunes. So if you have an iPhone, you can just go to the Purple Podcasts app on your phone. All iPhones come with that app downloaded. It's one of the standard ones. So go ahead and listen. Rating and reviews on iTunes are so important to podcasts and to getting podcasts out there and heard by other people. It really helps the algorithm, so please go leave a review. There's several left out there already. It means so much to me. Thank you. Please, if you like it, go leave a review, go star it. Of course, the podcast is also available on Spotify and just following the Anchor link, a bunch of other apps, so it's available. I want to start this episode out by sharing a voice message from a friend, Chloe. He was very generous enough to send me audio on his thoughts around decolonizing one's creative practice. I'm really eager to hear your thoughts, and so if you send me voice messages either on the Anchor app or on WhatsApp or to the email, which is diasporababes@gmail.com, I'll listen to them and I can play them on air.
When I think about decolonizing my creative practices, it goes to how I identify, referring to my gender expression. And you know, there is a lot of colonial damage around this. And, well, I don't really know if that makes sense, but there is a specific type of sexualization projected on folks that are seen as black women. And so, yeah, it's kind of hard to deal with this. And also, it's important for me to use creative practices to express my sensitiveness in a world where, as a black individual, we are mainly seen as aggressive or used to pain, so we don't express what kind of sadness actually inhabits us. And I feel like it's expected to always be related to racism. Well, no, I got trans issues, for example. I got issues during eclipse season. I got sad when my dish lacked taste at the French cuisine restaurant. You know, I have other issues. Sometimes decolonizing my creativeness deals with facing stereotypes. For example, I'm Caribbean. Often people expect me to sing in Creole. They question the fact that I'm not using this language enough, or they feel like I'm not using this language enough. I'm expected to create a certain type of music, or to play a certain type of music, to like a certain type of music, and only that kind of music. It's pretty challenging, actually. It's tiring also to permanently try not to think about whether I'm helping my environment or not to exotize me. And I know it's almost never the case, because my environment is gonna do it by itself, you know. White people don't need us to help them projecting stuff or the rest. So yeah, it's just something I'm worried about, and yeah, I think it's a big topic.
Dear Diaspora Babe, do you give your work permission to be itself? Well, maybe you give your work permission to be what it wants or who it wants, as long as it expresses itself in a specific way, as long as it acts right. Form and content, that's what this is about. How do you identify as a painter, a makeup artist, a photographer, a writer, a podcast, a musician? So many times we identify with the medium and not the message. Why is it easier to be open to new ideas and not change the medium? Why is it easier to be radical and revolutionary in the idea and not in the form or the choice of media? That's the question I asked that got me started on this episode. So often we want things to be paintings, photographs, drawings, when maybe your idea doesn't belong in any of those media. I think because specific media like oil painting and sculpture are structures, and structures are legible to hegemony. And so, to make our ideas valid for ourselves, as well as legible to structures of power, we force our work to conform to certain expectations of the media. I used to call oil painting a colonized medium, or a colonial medium. I think that was a bit sanctimonious and dismissive, but I said what I said, and I still kind of feel it. As someone who loves to oil paint. Thinking about it, I've definitely said the same thing about photography too, though. So just a little history in the case of oil painting. Oil painting was a key tool in creating and reinforcing and reflecting white dominance in visual culture. I spent a summer in London doing research on artists in diaspora for a fellowship back when I was in college, and I took a trip to the National Portrait Gallery in London. There are usually around 1,400 portraits on display of some of the most powerful and wealthy people in British history as well as global history. And the last time I was there, I counted, and there were like 4 portraits of persons of color maximum. Maybe like 2 were black people. That's about it. Oil painting, portraiture, was one of the primary ways that rich white people showed off their wealth and dominance for hundreds of years. And I truly feel like that history has seeped itself into the thick fluid of the media. That for me, there's this connection between the fluid of paint and bodily fluids. It's one of the things that I used to think about a lot and really used to investigate when I was more entrenched in the painting media. But also photography was and is a huge force in colonization. It was a tool of rendering the colonized subject naked and completely visible to the colonizer's eye. Bringing something into the realm of the visible was a way of bringing it within and under domination and control. Specifically European control and domination. The colonial project was one of grasping for power, of bringing quote-unquote the natural world within control, and a huge part of that enforcement was by rendering things visible, by penetrating the mystery, was often the way European colonists described their projects. Form and content. The way you make something, the media you use and the structures you invoke are part of the piece. The way you say something is what you say, and each form is attached to a different set of standards for judging it. I feel like this is somewhat inescapable. You perhaps don't have to conform to those standards that come with a certain medium, that come with like oil painting or photography or video work or whatever other medium you're using. You don't have to conform to them, but you can be sure other people will use them to judge your work. Probably they've been taught to, and they're looking to make themselves feel better by going off of standards that they've learned that are bigger than themselves. This is what the situation often is. You feel like worthless, like shit. You've been raised to feel that way. You've been raised to be out of touch with your essential divinity. You learn, so you're broken down by the oppressive structures in the world. It's inescapable, even if you don't pursue higher education and academic institutions. But then these institutions then offer a tradition that's older and wider than you. And you use it as a substitute for developing your own self-worth and letting your creative self be and flourish in its unique creative genius. I use genius in this case in a sense of a muse, like a genie almost. There's like this thing that you have inside you is like a spark, and You can talk to it and stuff like that. That's the genius that I mean. I don't mean genius necessarily in the, you know, like Albert Einstein sense. That's a whole other thing to talk about. But this process of letting old traditional, often colonial or white structures stand in for your self-worth or gain self-worth or power by using them or by swallowing them or reproducing them or conforming yourself to them or propping them up or propping yourself up or them being propped up on you. This is what I'm talking about. And I've done this and you may have done this and a lot of people are taught to do this. It's not just, you know, diaspora babes, like white people do this too. They use tradition and structure as a way to make themselves seem more important or be more important. And of course, there are some gorgeous things about tradition and about structure, about learning a tradition and having the work you do be built on many lifetimes that have passed before you. So you have access to this cumulative body of knowledge that is larger than time, which is both inseparable from yet transcends the specific time and place that you're living. But I want to be clear that there are other horizons, that the traditions that you learn and work with uplift you and let you access something true instead of keeping you from accessing your truth. So when you make something, give yourself a pat on the back. Be like, good job. Fucking did it. Good job. You gotta hype yourself up sometimes. You really gotta gas yourself up. And when you're talking about it to yourself and thinking about it and talking about it to others, I invite you to ask yourself, who is my audience? Who am I trying to reach? Is the medium I've chosen accessible? Do I want it to be accessible? Do I want to make money for this? What am I saying? What is the work saying? Then ask yourself, does my medium work for or against these things? And what is a medium? A halfway? Something that connects you to others. A way of bringing what's inside you to the world. A vehicle. A vessel. A person who holds and transmits messages from the spirit world to the physical world. All artists can be medium for source, for spirit, for tapping into something collective and outside linear time and expressing it in the now, in this physical, temporal moment. So you are a medium and you use media. Be open to new media. iPhone movies, memes, a podcast, games, tarot cards, rituals, performance, whatever, there's so many media and vehicles and channels for you to express your art and be open to creating new media and to pushing the media that you work in to its limits, pushing it till it becomes something else. And by all means, continue painting, photographing, writing academic essays, papers, novels, all of that. I know I will. Let your babies breathe. Think of your art like your child. Now, maybe you don't ever want to reproduce or have biological children or even adopt. And it's not about that. If you want kids, think about how you would raise them. But whether you want kids or not, think about yourself as a child. Think of you as a child. Think of your child self as your own child right now. You carry your child self, your inner child, with you into the world. And you can take responsibility to be the parent that you would have wanted for yourself. You wouldn't want to have a gender forced on you or to have harmful behavior passed on to you. And you wouldn't want to do that to any small human in your responsibility. The same goes for your art. Some parents can't see how much their kids have accomplished because of narrow expectations about what success looks like. I know I have experience with that. Don't be that person to your artistic babies. Don't judge your creations based off what the world tells you success should be or what greatness looks like. When your creations have a message about greatness contained within themselves, sometimes your art will create its own rules, just like you yourself. If you're living your life doing incredible things and your parents can't see it because you're queer, or you're like acting a certain way that the religion doesn't, their parents' religion say you shouldn't, all that, and they can't see all the credible and beautiful things that you do, I just want to say I see it. I see the incredible and beautiful things that you do. And allow yourself to be seen by yourself. See yourself. Be like, you fucking are doing it. You're so good. And that's the same for your art too, you know, just because your art doesn't look like something that you'll see in a white man's museum doesn't mean that it's not successful. It is still great in and of itself. So I hope you're seeing what I'm saying in weaving this parallel. Don't hate on your drawing or your sketch because it's not an oil painting, and refuse to see its worth for what it is and what it's trying to be and what it's trying to tell you instead of what you think it should be. Don't hate on your diaristic stream of consciousness essay poem because it's not an academic essay following the Chicago Manual of Style specifications. And obviously, sometimes compromises are to be made. Sometimes we have to compromise for specific projects we're working on or institutions we're working with, but recognize them for compromises when they're that. Permission is the main thing I'm getting to, I think. This is what this is really about. Give yourself permission to make the sort of art you want, to be the sort of person that you are. Give yourself permission to do the most traditional oil paintings you want, but also give yourself permission to do and be and like other things. Give yourself permission to be who you are. Give your art permission to be what it wants to be. Give your art permission to come through as it's meant to. Permission. It's a great word. Lindsay Mack from Tarot for the Wild Soul podcast, which was one of my favorite podcasts, said that the phrase for this month is unapologetic permission. And I think that that is really helpful in this context. Give yourself that unapologetic permission. Recently, I gave myself permission to go and use old photos and slice up photos and drawings and use sketches that didn't feel very complete or polished and make them into collages on my phone. Doing collages feels so refreshing. I was thinking why, and I realized it's partly because it was never a media I was taught. I never was taught the standards for what a good collage looks like. I mean, sure, I've seen collages and things made out of magazines, and I've seen them, and even in a fine arts context, like some of the Dadaists and some American artists who worked with abstraction in the 50s and 60s used collage a lot. So I have encountered it, but I wasn't disciplined in it. I never made collages in art school and had someone tell me, no, this is actually how you should do it and this is how you shouldn't do it. And so it was so free. I just felt so fucking free. And also, since it's on my phone, the phone's an agent of irreverence. Its connection to the internet, which is supposed to be so democratic. And so it's really freeing. I can just do whatever I want. And it feels so fucking good to make art out of school and realize I don't have to give a fuck about anyone else's opinion. I don't have to worry about if people like it or who likes it or doesn't, because I like it, and you know, I know other people do like it, but I'm not making it for their good opinion. Whereas in school, like, it's so much about your professors, your critique that you receive from your professors or from your peers. Literally, if someone doesn't like my work, I can tell them to go fuck themselves. Be like, fuck off, whatever, I don't care. That feels so good. And obviously, no, like, I genuinely really care about, and I'm very interested in hearing people's opinions about my work and having it be a conversation. Like, my work is a conversation. The thing that Alice Barkley Katz said about art as social relation has really shifted the way I think about my practice. It's all about relationships. And so, yeah. But there's a difference between embracing relationships and art and feeling beholden to someone else's structure of power. If you're not giving your work permission to be what it wants, are you giving yourself permission to be who you want? Let your ideas teach you about yourself. Give yourself permission to dream big. Dream first, and the way to execute the ideas will come later. But if you're using the limiting things in your head as an excuse to not give yourself permission to dream big, then throw out the practical stuff. Permission yourself. One of my friends does these wild cartoon illustration style drawings, anthropomorphized animals leap among the detritus of capitalism, the surveillance police state, and existentialism. The animals allow my friend to explore gender and race in a way he finds very intriguing. He was told by at least two older artists while in school that his work did not belong in an art gallery. It belongs in someone's hands, they said. It belongs maybe on the street. My friend took this to heart and heard that his art wasn't valuable, seeing art in galleries as the gold standard of artistic achievement, a sign that you had made it as an artist. While I don't think the older artist's criticism was well or fairly delivered, at least all of the time, my friend also is still learning to see his art as valuable for what it is, instead of what he thinks it should be. His insecurities are talking to him from other people's mouths, and he gives these insecurities a very willing ear. And maybe, like him, you are more concerned about the status of a gallery than what actually might be best to support your art and your vision. And that, in part, Diaspora Babes, comes from self-worth. Do your thing, babes. We're gonna make our own galleries, our own art shows, our own spaces. We're gonna be our own audiences, our own markets, our own benefactors. And it won't fucking matter whether white people like it or not or wanna put it in their galleries. By the way, they do like putting POC art in their shows sometimes because it makes them feel cultured, particularly if they're a fabulous oil painter who likes to paint back black and brown bodies who render them legible. That's the tea. I could make a whole episode on that, but that's for another time. Colonizers stay colonizing, my friends, and we don't want to be doing that to ourselves as well. So treat your art well. Give yourself and your creations lots of love. Let your art babies run free. Be your own art ancestor. Make the art you needed to see as a child, and make the art you would want someone like you to see in 50 years, in 100 years, in 500 years. And let that art and yourself take whatever form it craves. Give your art permission to be itself. Give you permission to be yourself. Love, Amal. And now, an epilogue from my dear friend Fatem on losing yourself and crying in the cinema.
Hi, girl. I wanted to share some thoughts that I just had right now in my kitchen. I noticed also that the Friday morning where I'm cleaning, I used to like listen to your podcast, and I think it became kind of like my Friday morning routine. I don't really have a routine in my life, but like I think the Friday morning is special somehow. I really related to the things you said about crying in cinema, because I'm such a crybaby in general, but like especially in cinema. And I definitely felt you being like, it just poured out from everywhere, like whatever the movie is. And I think it's really being like in that moment, like in another space-time, in another space world, in someone else's head also. Like sometimes I just feel the characters so strong, like I feel like I'm them, and I just sometimes like burst into tears, and I can't control, like cinema is really a crying place, like every time, even like in comedy, or there's gonna be like a slightly kind of like sad moment, I'm gonna be the first one crying. And like when you shared that thing, I was like, oh yeah, actually this happens a lot, like a lot. And I don't know, I always thought that everyone was like this, but then I started to like, because every time I was going to the cinema with friends or family, they were like, why are you making such a scene? Or why are you being so emotive? It's just like a movie, or, and they didn't get it. And for me, it was just like natural. I was like, why are you guys not crying, actually? Like that it felt so strong, and the emotions and the music and the lights, and how are you not moved that much? And but okay, now I'm starting to understand things differently. Like I remember precisely one movie that really, like, I just exploded. Like I think I've never cried like this for a movie. It was Mummy of Xavier Dolan. You probably watched it. That movie fucked me up. Like, yeah, I don't know. This movie definitely triggered me. Like I was crying the whole movie, and I was trying to hold it, and like the end. And I didn't even understand the end at that moment, and I don't know like if you watch it or not, so no spoiler. But like when the end happened and the movie stops, like everyone started to leave, and I remember I was with my mom watching that movie, and I stand up and I just cried, but like so loud, and I couldn't control myself, and I was shaking and sobbing, and I just sit down, and my mom was like, what the fuck? It really came out of nowhere. Like I was feeling the wave inside me that was growing and growing, and I was just like keeping it inside, and it just bursted into a tsunami, and I cried for like probably 20 minutes straight, but like sobbing really, really hard, and I felt so much thing inside being released. And I'm really having right now these images of waves, but like in a storm way. Like everything went out, and I couldn't just control myself. But at that moment, I really remember that I was having no idea why I was crying that much. That's the worst. Like I was not doing at all the work for connecting my emotions with my background and stuff like this. And I like it only maybe like right now I'm really realizing why I was that much moved by that movie, and the things that I needed to release were not that much about the movie but about myself. Yeah, here you are, Fatem, 6 years later, finally understanding it somehow.
Thank you so much, babes, for listening. I really appreciate it. This episode is coming out not on Friday, as I promised. I'm definitely going to be moving the release days. I think I'm going to be aiming to release on Saturdays, not Fridays. I got a second job like right after I started Diaspora Babes, and so my work schedule is a little different than I expected. But I am going to be putting out an episode every week, and I'm just going to try to figure out how this works within the rhythms of my life best. The music you're listening to, as usual, is by Leyl Omaran. Thank you so much. I have some amazing episodes coming up for you. They're all planned and lined up. I have some interviews with badass fucking artists and organizers. I have music coming to you. There's so many exciting things. And I just want to thank all of you for the beauty that you've shared with me and the way you've just come through and supported me. I feel so fucking loved and seen and held by you all. So thank you. This shit is really real, and it's meant to be. And I think we're creating something really wonderful. And I truly believe that change happens, and progress and growth rather happens in collective, and healing in collective. So keep holding each other close. I love you. Keep safe. Keep faith. Until next week.